All right, everyone, welcome to another edition of the Vine Edition, and I've got Paul D'Abruzzo here with us. I wanted to talk about something that's been in the news quite a bit, and that's the Greenbelt in Ontario and, you know, the Ontario's government proposal to sort of expand on that. You know, I think the original plan is to open up about 7,400 acres to build about 50,000 homes. And in exchange, they're going to take 9,400 acres and just sort of increase the green belt somewhere else. So, Paul, you're a real estate advisor. You work with tons of investors, and we've worked with you for quite a long time. And I know you've got some really great insight. I mean, has this been something that you expected, a conversation, you know, that you've been thinking about or have been talking about in your world, expanding the green belt?
I think it's a small symptom of a much larger conversation. And you know, if you can picture a map of, you know, Southern Ontario here, or what we call the Golden Horseshoe, we're basically on a real estate island. You know, you have in the blue to the bottom, which is Lake Ontario, and you have that green section kind of all the way to the top, which, you know, you cannot build on. And obviously we're not in Dubai, we're not building on the water anytime soon. So we're stuck. And we're stuck to the bottom, we're stuck to the west, we're stuck to the east, and we're stuck up north and with this land mass, and that's all we got to work with. And you know, the green belt plays a huge role because it's like a huge green umbrella kind of surrounding everything. And it, up until, you know, I guess this last article, I mean, you haven't been able to build on it. And we don't have to talk about politics here, but it's been essentially political suicide for anyone to even bring that up in the last couple decades, because you know, the environmentalists and people don't want it touched. And, you know, we don't have to agree or disagree. That just is what it was. And, you know, now that Dougie's got a bit of a majority there, he can do some things that, you know, he couldn't before. And they hinted at this in the past. And, you know, they want to take some sections and start to go forward. Now, how this impacts us as a whole, I mean, 50,000 homes is... it's a lot of homes, but to be honest, it's a drop in the bucket compared to the that we have, right?
I read some stuff where, you know, we're going to have a shortfall the next like 5 years, about 500,000 homes at least, half a million homes with all the immigration that Canada is expected to see, just sort of natural growth. And yeah, you're right, 50,000 homes is a massive drop in the bucket compared to the demand for housing we're going to need to build this population out the way we need to.
Yeah, and it doesn't, you know, what's interesting about what that proposal does, and we, never mind, we won't even talk about the environmental stuff, but like, it doesn't necessarily follow the recommended provincial plan, because the provincial plan is all about urban intensification and urban intensification around nodes. Mm-hmm. And that's not urban intensification, that's urban sprawl.
Yeah.
And I guess there's nothing wrong with that if you have the land, but you know, we also need farms, right? And, you know, some of this land kind of is protected. So as a developer also, I mean, we're also doing some developments within our own portfolios. It's like, what's the highest and best use of the land here?
Yeah. You know?
So that's a big question for me. And I'm not qualified to answer that. I'm not in the government. You know, we're just kind of looking at this from an investor's perspective and saying, you know, what is this affect me? And where's the opportunity?
Yeah, well, maybe that's a question we could look at. Like, where could there be an opportunity if you're looking at it as an investor perspective?
I mean, that specific thing, I don't think there's a, you know, specific investor opportunities specifically with this land that's going to be developed. I mean, it's going to be, I think it's in the northeast somewhere, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. And like, I mean, what are they going to build investor friendly houses out there? Or are they going to build a bunch of single family homes? You know, like I don't really see any cash flow type investments being delivered there, right? Maybe there's might be some condos if it's a mixed use site, but I mean, generally, it looks like another development to me.
Right? Just a bunch of single family type homes, subdivision style.
But
houses, you think?
Yeah, I think if you're gonna go out there, like you can't, you're gonna put 12 towers out there, like that doesn't make sense, right? You're going up there to build single family homes with maybe some mixed use, some, you know, low rise, that kind of thing for seniors, maybe, right? But I think it just hammers, it brings you back to the original question and like what's happening here in Southern Ontario and Golden Horseshoe. Look, like if you're an investor here and you're going to stay here long term and you want your money working for you, you know, we have a shortage of land, right? And if you can get yourself a single family home, or regardless if it's Toronto or if it's Oshawa or if you're kind of northeast of Peterborough, or if you're in the west, a KW, a Hamilton, a Niagara, you know, where we spend a lot of time, you know, you really can't go wrong because they're not making any money, many more single family homes. If you look at the statistics, you know, the vast majority of new units coming onto the market are condo. They're not single family homes. And even if they are single family, they classify townhouses and semis as single families also, which usually have, you know, and I'm not trying to put down anyone who got a townhouse, but they're postage stamp type lots. Like you can't, it's not like you have a pool size lot or anything. So land and having land with your property, at least a decent backyard, is not common anymore. So if you can get a property like that and then make it cash flow, to me, it's a no-brainer. Like it's a no lose, only win scenario.
Especially over the long term. I know it's difficult for some people who just got a house 7 months ago to be like, yeah, this, you know, I'm probably underwater right now. But over the long term, and that's the way you should be looking at this, because this is a bit of an unusual year. I mean, you're fine. You know, being in that market, in the real estate market, where do you see like the trend with first-time buyers? Do you see them looking at getting out of the city and out somewhere that's more affordable, or maybe into places that have some rental unit capacity because of how expensive it is to get a home? Like, is there a trend that you're seeing at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think the conversation has changed. And I don't think I'm that old. I'm 37, but you know, I was sitting with a friend at Jack Astor's, and in the booth behind me was a bunch of kids, you know, 25, 26, 27, 10 years younger than me. And, you know, they're talking about moving here and moving there. And the conversation was so different than when I was that age. Because when I was that age, it was about, where are you going to buy? Yeah. And now it's, where am I going to rent?
Got it. Yeah. That's good. That's an interesting way of looking at it. And it's a bit of a newer thing for a bigger market, let's say the GTA or Toronto, because generally the concept in Canada is you should be a homeowner, you should be a proud homeowner. But there's a lot of big markets all around the world, you know, like down south, we've got New York and big cities like London and Tokyo and Paris and wherever, right? Where being a renter for life is completely reasonable. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, in some cases, I would say to an investor, it might make sense to live, rent where you live and where you work and where you want to be. You know, don't compromise in having to move so far out because of cost, and then invest in where you can potentially, you know, buy a home and get your money to work for you. I think that's a reasonable strategy, to be honest.
Correct. And I think we're in like a weird middle zone where we're heading toward a scenario like that. Like it's almost inevitable over a period of time that we end up that way in the greater GTA, right? Like, I mean, if you're going to bet, which way are you going to bet? It's going to go the other way. No chance, right? I had another direct conversation with one of my personal trainers last year, young kid, and he's 25. He lives in Etobicoke. He still lives with his parents. He's moving out with his girlfriend. He's going to rent a condo. And I'm like, dude, you got to, obviously he's talking to me. I'm like, dude, you got to buy, right? And he's like, wow, yo, easy for you to say this and that. And I'm like, I don't want to live in, you know, St. Catharines or Barrie. And I said, bro, I didn't tell you you had to live there. I said you can own there.
Yeah.
Go live wherever you want. Go live in Liberty Village. Who cares? But own somewhere else. Because now you're getting the best of both worlds. You want to live close to the action and be with your friends, or your girlfriend wants to live there because it's close to work. That's fine. But get your money in the game, because by the time you're ready to buy, you'll be costed out if your income's not growing that fast. Right. Yeah. And I could see the kind of the light bulb go off in his eyes. So I think for young people, and, you know, you're almost forced to think like an investor, because it's not like you have a wide selection. So you got to get your money working for you, or you got to get in the game, or you'll be on the outside looking in pretty soon.
So maybe we can leave it on that point. I like that. I mean, you know, unfortunately, there isn't any very great financial literacy in most of our education system. Most people are programmed where their parents told them, you got to get a job, you got to buy a home. But I think maybe we should be reframing that, you know, live and work where you want to live, you know, have access to all the amenities and whatever you want. If you want to live somewhere that's generally a little bit more expensive, but use whatever funds you have access to, chat with someone, Paul and his team, about investing in a market where you can afford to invest in and allow it to build up. Because like you said, you know, we're looking at tapping into the green belt because we're running out of land. So land is very scarce. So that just means over the long term, I agree with you. Like, I would bet the value is really going to continue to go up over that next, you know, 5, 10, 20 year period. And at that point, hey, they can, maybe they've got enough equity where they potentially could buy, or they can continue to live and use that equity just to buy more rental properties and build up a nice little nest egg so they can also have equity like your parents did. You know, that's kind of
new game plan. I've never coached a young person who regretted buying a property early, whether they moved in or not. Never happened zero times,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so I think for young people or just first-time buyers in general, like you got to take a look at it like an investor's, because your sampling of properties that are going to be available to you is about to shrink to almost nothing pretty soon.
Great. Well, Paul, I know you do some coaching stuff as well for some investors, so we'll plug and put all that information here, man. But I appreciate you giving us a little insight, man.
Yeah.
And all the best, man. Thanks. We'll do this again.
Thanks. Talk soon. Go. Ciao, ciao.